When John F. Kennedy took the oath of office on January 20, 1961, the United States stood at a moment of extraordinary confidence and deep anxiety. The country was wealthy, powerful, and increasingly conscious of its global leadership, yet it was also haunted by the possibility of nuclear war, challenged by the Soviet Union, divided by racial injustice, and uncertain about the moral meaning of its own prosperity. Kennedy's presidency began with youth, style, eloquence, and promise. He was the youngest man ever elected president, the first Roman Catholic to hold the office, and a figure who seemed to embody the forward motion of a modern America. His inaugural address captured the tension of the age with unforgettable clarity. "Ask not what your country can do for you," he declared, "ask what you can do for your country." That sentence became more than a line of political rhetoric. It became the moral signature of the new frontier, a program and an attitude that invited Americans to see themselves as citizens of a demanding republic, participants in a global struggle, and heirs to a national mission still unfinished. The new frontier was Kennedy's name for the challenges of the 1960s, but it also reflected a longer American tradition. Since the 19th century, Americans had imagined the frontier as a place of renewal, danger, opportunity, and national destiny. By 1960, the physical frontier of westward expansion had long since closed, but Kennedy argued that new frontiers remain. In science, space, poverty, education, civil rights, foreign policy, and public service. His language appealed to a generation that had grown up during the Great Depression and World War II, matured during the early Cold War, and now faced a future shaped by missiles, television, suburbs, universities, and global revolutions. In Kennedy's hands, the frontier became not a geographical line but a moral and political test. The United States, he insisted, had to prove that democracy was not tired, selfish, or complacent. It had to show that a free society could be creative, disciplined, generous, and strong. Kennedy's election in 1960 was one of the closest in American history, and the narrowness of his victory shaped his presidency from the beginning. Running against Richard Nixon, the sitting vice president under Dwight D. Eisenhower, Kennedy presented himself as a vigorous alternative to what he described as drift and caution. Nixon had experience, party organization, and a reputation for toughness against communism, but Kennedy understood the new political power of image. The televised debates between the two candidates became legendary because they revealed the transformation of American politics in the television age. Nixon, pale and tired-looking, appeared less commanding on screen than Kennedy, who seemed composed, energetic, and self-assured. Radio listeners often thought Nixon had done well, but television viewers frequently favored Kennedy. The lesson was unmistakable. Modern political leadership would increasingly depend not only on policy and speech, but also on performance, presence, and emotional connection. Kennedy's victory depended on a delicate coalition of urban voters, labor unions, African Americans, Catholics, intellectuals, and parts of the South still loyal to the Democratic Party. His Catholicism had been a serious obstacle during the campaign, especially among Protestants who feared that a Catholic president might take orders from the Vatican. Kennedy confronted this suspicion directly in a speech to Protestant ministers in Houston, insisting that he believed in an America where the separation of church and state was absolute and where no religious body dictated public policy. That speech helped reassure some voters, but it also demonstrated Kennedy's political skill. He could speak calmly about divisive questions without seeming defensive, and he could turn a potential weakness into a statement about American pluralism. His election suggested that the United States was changing, becoming more open in some ways, even as old prejudices and exclusions remained powerful.